Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Clay Travis joins us every Friday at this time. Always great to have him on the show, and we announced last week that he'll be with us each Friday at 11 a.m. Clay, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Awesome.
So, Clay, we were just discussing this Adam Sparks story from the Tennessean about Vanderbilt and reports that university administrators are undercutting efforts to build a new stadium. And a lot of past quotes from David Williams in here. They're moving the National Commodore Club off campus. You were on with us recently and talked about having seen plans for a new stadium that Vanderbilt wanted to build. What, I mean, to me, the only word I keep thinking about when I read this is depressing. If you're a Vanderbilt fan and you read a story like this.
Well, if James Franklin had stayed at Vanderbilt, they were going to build a new stadium. And that was what they sold him on the idea. They had commitment lined up. They had funding. They had people selling season tickets. I mean, that was what they sold him on, why he should stay at Vanderbilt. And they were prepared to do it. And he decided to leave. And I think, honestly, Vanderbilt football has basically collapsed since James Franklin left. I mean, there's no fan base. And it's hard to sell somebody on a fan base when, let's be honest, Derek Mason has not been very successful, even by historical Vanderbilt standards. I mean, what is he, 6-26, I think, in 4 years in the SEC? They're basically hanging their hat on the fact that they've beaten 2 years in a row, one of the worst Tennessee teams, or certainly the worst Tennessee team in the history of the program. I think it's just a sad state of affairs for Vanderbilt. I mean, they don't have a fan base, and I think Vanderbilt fans acknowledge and recognize that. And I don't know how you rectify it. I'm not a believer that you building a stadium and having none of your fans in it doesn't make sense to me in any way. So I don't buy into this idea that there's tons of Vanderbilt fans out there who would come to the games if they had a better football stadium. I think what would happen is Vanderbilt would make more money off of fans of other teams that came to Vanderbilt Stadium and filled it up. So I don't necessarily blame Vanderbilt for right now what's going on with Derek Mason not advancing the idea of building a stadium when, let's be honest, when you build a stadium, you are choosing to take money from donors that would otherwise potentially go to fund other aspects of Vanderbilt University. And I think probably, and again, I haven't read that article, but based on what I have heard and based on conversations that I've had, there are a lot of things at Vanderbilt that they think are more important than a football stadium.
They're not lacking for funds on any of that stuff. No major university with that kind of endowment is. Why do you think there's a reluctance in-house on West End to look at familiar or parallel schools? Why can't they look at Northwestern, which just built maybe the most amazing practice facility in the country? Why can't they look at Stanford and say, hey, Stanford's pretty damn good too, and they've got a completely functional athletic program and football team, and it's a more complete experience there for a kid than it is here?
I don't know where the money comes from for Stanford. For Northwestern, I would say Pat Fitzgerald has changed everything about Northwestern football. And I would say if Vanderbilt had a former alum like Pat Fitzgerald who came back to the school and consistently won 8 or 9 football games, and I don't know, what has Pat Fitzgerald been there now, for a decade? And he's had lots of opportunities to leave. I think if James Franklin had stayed at Vanderbilt, then things at Vanderbilt would be similar to what things are like at Northwestern right now. I think they would have made that commitment. I think if you look at Stanford, how long has David Shaw been there now? A decade? Prior to David Shaw and Jim Harbaugh coming in there, I mean, Stanford was, I mean, absolutely atrocious. If you go look at what happened, I think Ty Willingham was the last coach before Jim Harbaugh came in.
Well, they had a previous era with Bill Walsh.
Well, and Clay, it sounds like what you're saying is that Vandy just essentially packed it up and called it quits the moment James Franklin left because they had stuff ready for him. And then once they decided they couldn't keep James Franklin, football was over for them.
No, I don't think football was over. I think they hoped that Derek Mason would continue the momentum, and he hasn't.
Yeah,
I think this is about not just James Franklin leaving. I think it's the drop-off between James Franklin and Derek Mason. If Derek Mason had come in and continued and won 8 or 9 games like David Shaw did when he took over for Jim Harbaugh, then I think the momentum would have continued to grow. I think the moment that Vanderbilt came jogging out onto the field after that rain delay and got their ass kicked by, was it UMass?
Who
was
Temple. Temple. UMass. UMass took him to the wire a week later.
Yeah. I mean, when Temple showed up and kicked Vanderbilt's ass in the first game without James Franklin, I think everybody said, uh-oh. And I don't think, to be fair, through 4 years of Derek Mason so far, there's been any reason for momentum. Look, I mean, in order to make people come off their wallet, you have to win. And you may have to win at a historic level that hasn't happened before. James Franklin won 9 games at Vanderbilt for the first time since women had the right to vote back-to-back years, okay? That was a different caliber of success. Vanderbilt has tons of wealthy owners out there. But if you've got a John Ingram of the world making a decision about what he's going to do, and suddenly he gets the opportunity to build a brand-new stadium and bring MLS to Nashville, or he gets the opportunity to advocate for a new Vanderbilt football stadium, I think he made his decision on the MLS. And I think the bigger issue that Vanderbilt has in general is there are a lot more entertainment options than Vanderbilt athletics. When I was growing up, and I'm 39, I grew up in Nashville, going to a Vanderbilt basketball game at Memorial Gym was probably the best thing you could do as a kid growing up in Nashville. Even if you didn't like Vanderbilt, you could go to Memorial Gym, and that place had an incredible atmosphere. It was exciting. It was exuberant. And where does Vanderbilt athletics rank on the scale of entertainment options for kids today? I've got kids. They don't want to go watch a Vanderbilt football game if they can go watch a Titans game. They don't want to go watch a Vanderbilt basketball game if they can go to a Preds game. And that doesn't even factor in driving to Neyland for a game in Knoxville or driving down to Memphis for a game in the NBA. Like, kids today in the state of Tennessee and in the city of Nashville and surrounding communities have so much better options than Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt's product has gone down while everybody else's product has gone up. And I think the result you've seen is they're not crazy at Vanderbilt. They look around and say, we ain't got no fan base. And if we don't have a fan base, why would we build a new stadium so that fans of other teams can watch our team play there?
Clay, you know David Williams well. How frustrated do you think he is by all of this?
Well, I think he was crushed when James Franklin left. Because I think what David Williams would say, and I think what James Franklin sold, is I'm not responsible for what happened before me. And I think that's an important lesson that everybody else out there can take in their own lives, too. You go take a new job and somebody says, well, you know, nobody's ever won there. Well, I've never been here before. You know, that's not my fault. And James Franklin was big on selling that. And I think David Williams sold it to him. You know, David Williams said, hey, I can't apologize for what happened in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s because I was not here. And so as a result, saying Vanderbilt can't win because of what happened in the 1990s when I wasn't here, like, why would you hold me accountable for decisions that were made by people that are not me? I like David Williams, my law professor at Vanderbilt. I think he's been good overall to the university, certainly. But I think that we'll see what happens with Bryce Drew. You know, I mean, I think there's the possibility that he's going to come in and get Vanderbilt rolling with these 5 stars. They're going to win at a different level. Look at Vanderbilt baseball. I mean, you can question whether they'll build things. I mean, Tim Corbin has dominated in a level maybe that nobody else has in the state of Tennessee since Pat Summitt at his athletic program. As a result, Vanderbilt's gone out and spent a lot of money on his stadium and everything else that surrounds it. So, you know, I think David Williams would point to baseball and say, hey, if we get the right guy, and this is key, and we can keep him here, we can win at a high level at Vanderbilt. I think they had the right guy in James Franklin. Maybe they've got the right guy in Bryce Drew. Go look at the hires that David Williams has made. In general, I think he's made pretty good hires when he's had the opportunity to go out and get a big coach, right? I mean, Corbin is a home run, and everything to keep Corbin at Vanderbilt when he could have gone anywhere in the country, let's be honest. They've kept him there. I think he's probably going to finish his career there. Franklin was a home run. I think that since Derek Mason's been hired, that's probably like a to bunt and get on base, if you want to use a baseball metaphor. And worst case scenario, he's a strikeout. You know, I don't know. Through 4 years, I think the best thing you can say is he laid the bunt down and legged it out to first. I mean, I think that's probably the best baseball metaphor you could make for Derek Mason. Bryce Drew, there's reason for cautious optimism. Remember, Kevin Stallings was there for 20 years. So there haven't been that many hires. And in fact, I imagine that's what David Williams sells when he goes and hires a new coach is, you get here, you do a decent job, you're going to be able to stay here for the rest of your career. By the way, I was just told off the air that the Phil Bredesen campaign was concerned that I might be asking him questions, which just incredibly amazing.
I think they saw our tweet that you were coming on the show, and they wanted to know if you were on the show when he was here.
Reed, you can add some color to this, because I think you received the message from their campaign, right?
Yeah, probably about 15 minutes before they arrived, they sent me another email asking if Clay was going to be part of the interview. To which I said no, but I almost said yes just to see what the reaction would have been.
Oh, I would love that. I love that I've got politicians just running scared of even being in the same tweet with me. Like,
I mean, he's the most unobjectionable politician in the history of statesmen, if you will, in the history of recent mankind.
Well, but the question centers around a group that's attached themselves to Clay. So if you're in his campaign, you see that, and immediately they get nervous about what is this?
I think it's hysterical. I think it's hysterical. You want to be a governor?
I think it's funny too.
State, and you are afraid that somebody might be on the air, and what? That like you're.
I don't know. Let's not jump
to
he was afraid. He wanted the information. Maybe he wanted to come on. Maybe he was hoping you were on.
Well, you guys ask Ben. Ask who the person is, because I always think it's funny when people are like, oh, I need to be given one of the three most important offices that can be won in a state, right? Senator or governor. And then you hear one of these politicians and they're like, wait a minute, am I going to have to answer questions of Clay? Like, you expect Phil Bredesen to stand up to Donald Trump and he's not even willing to come on the radio?
What would you have asked
him? I might be on the radio.
I give you one question with him. What would you have asked him?
If I were going to interview Phil Bredesen, what would I ask him? He's won the election was just yesterday, right? He's
the primary,
right?
He's the
I would say, you know, you're trying to run as an independent, right? I mean, I think it's fair to say that if he runs as a Democrat, he's going to get crushed because Trump won Tennessee by 25 points. You're trying to argue that you are going to be fair and balanced in the way that you're going to be a middle of the road guy, right? How would you respond to the fact that your campaign chair, I think, basically has been on Twitter for the past 2 years ripping and ridiculing anyone who would ever vote for Donald Trump, calling them idiots? Don't you think that's the exact opposite as the message that you're trying to sell to people when you employ people on your campaign that do that?
Yeah, he may have not liked that question. Now that I hear him thinking, I probably wouldn't have liked that.
He probably would run from it. But again, that's the point. I think that if you are, let's be straightforward, regardless of what political party you're running from, I think if you are not willing to answer questions from freaking radio show hosts, why would I trust you to go make decisions on the Senate floor or in the governor's office? To me, if you're running from being called to question legitimately for things that you have said, you're not somebody I can trust.
How did he do as mayor and governor? How did he do as mayor and governor in your estimation?
Well, hold on. To be fair, before we get to that, we're not saying that Sir Bredesen, we didn't know what to call him.
Statesman
Mayor,
Bredesen.
Governor, Statesman Bredesen. They didn't say they were afraid of Clay. They just asked,
asked
Clay going to be on, right?
Yes.
Okay. So there wasn't a follow-up of, well, good, we're glad that guy's not going to be on with
us. Yeah. My point here is I actually voted for the guy for governor. I just think it's funny that he's afraid.
I'm with you on your broader point. I'm just saying, I'm clarifying, I don't know that he was afraid of you.
The next step was going to be like, I'm a huge fan of Clay Travis, and I just really hope he's going to be there.
No, but we don't jump to presuming that everybody's intimidated by you the way you jump to presuming everybody's intimidated by
you. If you ask to me, that's a sign that you're intimidated.
Well, Clay, let's jump to this. Dan Wilkins intimidated me after yesterday because I destroyed him in an interview, and it was no contest, first round knockout. What do you think about this stance from Dan Wolkin? And I'll kind of paraphrase. You know, I asked him about the text that were made public with him and John Curry. He went into this 5-minute filibuster about he's not going to talk about confidential sources. He basically acted like he was the Pope when he was talking about his role as a media member and everything else. And then I asked him about, well, since the texts are public, can you acknowledge that there's a reason that Tennessee fans think you're really not objective when it comes to this case with Greg Schiano? And he wouldn't really answer that either. But media members like a Dan Wolkin, their inability to admit anything that actually goes on and how they do their job and to ever admit any fault. What do you think?
Yeah, look, Dan Wolkin is a pussy willow, and I use the word willow because it allows me to say pussy willow in front of it. I mean, the guy is a huge pussy willow, all right? And the truth of the matter is this. His entire argument was blown up that Greg Schiano was a great hire when Urban Meyer is removed as the head coach of Ohio State. And Greg Schiano, who he trumpeted to the high heavens because Jimmy Sexton called him and because John Curry called him and because he wants to keep them returning his phone calls and returning his text messages, he trumpeted them to the high heavens as this great coach, okay? If you believe that, then why in the world would Ohio State, when given the opportunity to name an interim coach, choose not to name Greg Schiano as their next coach, right? And it may well be a guy who coaches for the entire year. This is a guy who's been a head coach. This is a guy who has been at Ohio for multiple years. This is the guy Dan Wolkin said is an unbelievable, impeccable coaching hire. Tennessee fans should be on their hands and knees praising John Curry for the fact that he made this hire. And my point on it's pretty straightforward. You are a hypocrite if you will not call out Ohio State for not promoting from within this same guy that you said Tennessee should hire externally and bring in as a coach, because you said Ohio State had vetted him. There was nothing at all in his past that was remotely inappropriate. My point and my statement here would be pretty straightforward. How in the world is Greg Schiano not the coach, and how in the world are you not beating the drum screaming about how unfairly Greg Schiano is being treated by Ohio State? It's the exact same logic you use to call Tennessee fans idiots, and now you won't apply it to your own argument. That, to me, is the sign of a pussy willow.
Well, and Clay, I've gone back and thought about the interview and some of the things that perplexed me the most about what Dan Wolkin said. And he slipped this in at one point where he said something like, why don't you ask Tennessee fans why Jimmy Sexton would think that Greg Schiano would be a great hire at Tennessee? A Tennessee alum, Jimmy Sexton, wanted him to be the coach at Tennessee. To which I'm thinking, Jimmy Sexton does not care at all about Tennessee football and their success. That was a challenge to Jimmy Sexton to see if he could get Greg Schiano a job, knowing that Jeremy Pruitt was eventually going to get a job. He needed to get Greg Schiano a job quicker.
I think Jimmy Sexton cares about whether or not Tennessee wins football games, but I think he cares more about whether he's good at his job. And so I think he thought that Greg Schiano was a valid decision. What happened with Greg Schiano was a panic, right? Everybody believed that Dan Mullen was going to be the next coach at Tennessee. And then all of a sudden, UCLA fired Chip Kelly, and Florida, who everybody believed was going to hire Chip Kelly, suddenly scrambled and stepped in and stole away Dan Mullen at the last moment, right before he was set to be announced as the Tennessee head football. And so as a result, John Curry panicked, went back to his list and said, okay, let's go get Greg Schiano. And I don't think they did a good job vetting. I think it's a lot like when John McCain suddenly ended up with Sarah Palin, and people said, well, how in the world did this happen? Did they do the vetting? Did they do all the due diligence? No, because they were hoping that it was going to be somebody else. Who did McCain want? He wanted Lieberman. He wanted a Democrat. He wanted to run as his own man and have a mixed ticket. And I think as a result, at the last moment, he's like, okay, she's perfect. Let's grab her. And then everybody starts to do the vetting, and they start to ask the questions. They say, my God, what happened here? It's a panicked hire. And the result is of a panicked hire. It's often a bad hire, and I think that's what John Curry did happen. What John Curry should have done was take a breath, go back to the drawing board, reassess all the available coaching candidates out there, and not panic and not rush to make a hire. Instead, he panicked. He went and grabbed Schiano, and I think the vetting was not very thorough. And as a result, look, if Greg Schiano was this amazing hire, and I'm sure I know you argued this with Dan Wolkin too, how come no other school in the country has hired him since? How come Ohio State won't even promote him internally to take over the job?
Not only that, it's the two messages that we continue to hear. Dan Wolkin in this interview even said, Tennessee fans, lunatic fringe, negative environment, all this stuff. If all of America believes Tennessee fans are just crazy idiots, then any AD can make that distinction easily if they believe Greg Schiano is a great coach. They can say, Tennessee fans are idiots. We don't care. We're going to hire him. Maybe, just maybe, Tennessee fans were on to something with this
and other ADs
agree with them.
Not only that, it's not like Alabama fans aren't flipping lunatics, right? I mean, Nick Saban is winning at Alabama because he's a great coach, not because of their fan base or their facilities or anything else. If Nick Saban had been hired 12 years ago at Tennessee, I think he would have won 5 national championships at Tennessee, or 9 years ago, just like he has at Alabama. I think it's about the coach, not about the program. So all this, like, it's laziness. It's laziness from pussy willows who sit around and say, oh, the fans are so demanding. The fans are so tough. Alabama fans are the dumbest and craziest fan base in all of college football, and they've got the best coach. That's because Saban is not afraid of the job. Dumb and crazy fans have high expectations, insanely high expectations. Tennessee is one of the 10 winningest football programs of all time. The Tennessee fan base has high expectations that Tennessee should consistently, over 20 and 30 year periods, be one of the 10 best programs in college football, just like they have been for the past 100 years. That's not an irrational, absurd belief. And by the way, especially when you consider that the state of Tennessee has never been more fertile in terms of its desirability as a place to live, in terms of its population exploding, the job of recruiting at Tennessee has never been easier than it is right now. Tennessee fans aren't dumb. They look around and see all of this and acknowledge that it takes the right coach to win, and they didn't believe Greg Schiano was the right coach. And guess what? It's the same opinion Ohio State just had when they had to make a decision who they would elevate potentially to coach for an entire year if Urban Meyer's not going to be there. To me, if you're Dan Wolken, you maybe have to go back and reassess your opinion and be like, guess what? Maybe I misdiagnosed this. Maybe in my desire to be well-liked by an athletic director and a powerful agent who will return my text messages and return my calls, I allowed that bias to cloud my objectivity, which is a problem. Because when you are in the opinion business, whether you like me, hate me, whatever else, I try to be as brutally objective as I can be and not play favorites, right? If you start consistently being shown to play favorites based on who's returning your phone call, then what's your value at all? You aren't even sharing your actual opinion. You're sharing the opinion that gets your phone calls returned, and that is always, I think, a recipe for disaster.
Got to be quick here. I agree with your premise there, and I do think you abide by it. You don't think you were biased towards James Franklin, who you had a good relationship with, who you have a good relationship with?
I don't think so, because he won more games than anybody since the prohibition and since women got the right to vote. I mean, if James Franklin had been going 5-7, 6-6, 4-8, and I'd been like, this guy's the greatest coach of all time, then I think you could certainly call that into question. James Franklin is the most successful Vanderbilt football coach in 100 flipping years. So I like James Franklin. I think he's a great coach. By the way, he's already won the Big Ten. I think the fact that I like him is secondary to the fact that he's good. If he sucked, I would rip it. I like Derek Dooley. I have a great relationship with Derek Dooley. I think he sucked as a Tennessee coach, and I regularly said it on the radio. Now, maybe he'll do a better job as an offensive coordinator. Maybe he can come back and be a good coach in the future.
He can.
But objectively, everything that James Franklin did and has done, I mean, the guy's, what, 45 years old? He may be the best 45 and under head football coach in America right now if you look at his resume. I like him, but I think the fact that he's successful is a much more significant impact of whether or not I like him. Now, Withrow's a really good friend of mine. If Withrow, like, committed a murder, I'd probably go on the air and try to defend him. I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I don't think Withrow would have done this based on my relationship with him. I'd be like Al Cowlings with OJ back in the day.
This guy's capable of a lot, but not murder. Yeah, not to my
very,
you could call me there, but it's not like James Franklin and I are, like text messaging every day or hanging out on a regular basis, right? I mean, I like him. We're friendly. We're friends maybe even. But it's not like if he suddenly lost his job at Penn State that my life would be impacted in any way.
It's a good answer.
Clay is Chad's AC. That's what we just learned.
Clay, gas up the Bronco, please. I'll be over in a minute.
Yeah.
Clay, thank you, man. Always enjoy having you on.
Great stuff today.
All right, appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Yep. Clay Travis with us every Friday at 11 a.m.
Never dull, that Clay Travis.